Welcome to the Carol Danvers Show, a brand new podcast talking about the Marvel Comics character Carol Danvers,
also known as
Ms. Marvel or Captain Marvel. I think the general public is going to know her more as Captain Marvel because that's the movie that's coming out. But first, she started out just as Carol Danvers in, I think it's Marvel Superheroes number 14, which is the second appearance of Captain Marvel, the original Captain Marvel, who's a Kree soldier. And then she gets powers, and she becomes Ms. Marvel. And so we're reading the first issue of Ms. Marvel from 1977. So anyway, before we go on, we should just introduce ourselves. To my right is Ariel Wayne, who is a really fast reader and a great visual artist as well. So I think you're pretty qualified to talk about
comic books.
Yeah, exactly. And then my name is Lewis Patzner, and I'm not as fast of a reader, but I'm not like slow or nothing.
But you're really, really into it. Which makes you very qualified.
Well, okay, here. I've been reading X-Men, and I kind of made it a project to read the Chris Claremont run of X-Men, which is from 75 to 1991, I think. And Chris Claremont wrote the bulk of the original Ms. Marvel run. He didn't write the first two issues, but starting issue three, he wrote all the issues. And so for me, it's kind of part of that writing project. And then also, I remember I was looking for a... I wanted to get some background on Carol Danvers, and because she's pretty important to X-Men. And I was looking for a podcast that would do this, because there's other ones that go through the issues. You know, there's X-Men, there's Spider-Man, there's a Defenders/Teen Titans podcast that I had never listened to.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, they're out there. It's sort of like a comic book in audio form.
But there was nothing for
Ms. Marvel, yeah.
Yeah.
Or Carol Danvers. So, you know, to me it seemed like something that I wanted to listen to. Maybe other people would want to listen to, too. And so, basically,
here we are.
Yeah.
And Ms. Marvel.
Yeah, so Ariel and I are musicians. Ariel plays, well, you're a multi-instrumentalist. And our theme music is from her album, Cat Face. That's the plan. We're going to put it in there. But you also have a master's degree in violin playing.
Yes.
And I am a professional cellist. I play the cello. I actually have another podcast where it's more music-centric, and it's called The Crossover Cellist, where I just interview my friends and colleagues about our various musical projects. And, yes, but we're both multi-instrumentalists, and you should check out Ariel Wang's band.
And
it's called Ariel Wang.
You should check out Lewis Patzner.
Yeah, .com. All right, we're reading this on an iPad. This issue is kind of hard to get in print. But you can get it digitally. This is Ms. Marvel number one, and right now we're just looking at the cover, and it says, the fabulous first issue, all-out action, at last a bold new superheroine in the senses-stunning tradition of Spider-Man. Whatever that means. It means J. Jonah Jameson's in it.
Sure, yes.
Then it says, featuring the most mysterious woman warrior since Madame Medusa. And if you think our leading lady is something special, wait till you see her star-studded supporting cast. And then in the top box on the left-hand corner, it says January, number one, 30 cents. And it says the female fights back, which is kind of corny.
Well, if you read comics and you get into things like, oh, I don't know, this little obscure dude named Spider-Man, then, you know, makes an appearance, you know? Little Petey.
Petey makes an appearance, yeah, okay.
But
yeah, and he's on the cover. Him, Mary Jane, J. Jonah Jameson, Scorpion is on the cover, Carol Danvers as Carol Danvers and as Ms. Marvel, and she's like punching her way through the panel, right?
Yes.
And she looks very heroic. And her outfit is a little bit ridiculous. Has the star thing in the front, but then it's showing a lot of skin.
Well, we've all, I think, realized now that if women were actually forced to fight in the superhero costumes that they're forced to wear, it would be very difficult, and it's definitely made more for the male gaze than actual
gaze,
fighting.
Gaze. Right?
Gotta be very certain.
Is what you meant?
And so, you know, the outfit's a little ridiculous. You see, you know, superheroes fighting in skin tight, you know, vinyl and high heels and such.
But this is like skin tight skin.
Yeah.
Showing a lot of skin.
Well, there's showing a lot of skin.
It's like if you had a button up shirt and you button from the neck to the boobs and then let the other parts not be buttoned.
And
then
decided
put on some
to
underwear.
Forget your pants.
Forget your pants, but put on boots and underwear.
Yeah.
That's basically her costume. She has cool gloves on, she has a mask, and she has blonde hair. All right. Let's crack this open, yeah?
Yeah.
All right. I mean, slide to the next screen. All right, so first we get some credits. Conceived, written, and edited by Gary Conway, who... Like, I just read some Spider-Man by Gary Conway. I think he's one of the main Spider-Man writers. But anyway, and then art and storytelling by John Buscema. I think it's Schema.
Care and embellishment. What is that? I want to be in care and embellishment.
I think that means the inking.
Oh.
But probably also some, like, finishing. Like, probably John would do, like, the overall layout. And then maybe not every little detail, like see on this building, we have little bricks and stuff. Maybe Joe Sinnott, or whatever you call it. We're not comics industry people. We don't know these things. But maybe he would go in and like kind of embellish that, right?
Yeah.
But then he probably also did the inking, because usually you have an inking credit. And then John Costanza letters, Marie Severin colors, and it doesn't say the editor-in-chief. They do that later.
Well, they said conceived, written, and edited by, so I wonder if that's all the... Anyway, so there's a
credit, a little star that says, with more than a little aid from and abetment from Carla Conway, who I assume is Gary Conway's wife, right? And so I think the way they do these comics is... So if it says art and storytelling by John Buscema, the artist, that means... he is basically coming up with the plot, mainly. Gary Conway probably talked to him about the plot, but the first thing that happens is the artist goes in and draws everything, and then the writer will come in and insert the text into the bubbles, you know. And I guess that he consulted with his wife, which is a good call for the creation of, like, a
female character?
Well, the first female character to have her own title, I'm pretty sure.
Right.
You know, that may not be right, but it's an important benchmark, I would say, this issue.
Guys, we've established it's important that when you write about women, that you should maybe consult a woman.
Yeah.
I'm glad that that has finally been discovered by humanity and realized.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, or at least whenever this came out.
Yeah. So this issue is titled...
76. That's when men realized.
Oh, is it 76?
Yeah.
Well, no, it says... Okay, yeah, copyright 76, but the first issue came out January 77.
All right, so the 70s was really when men realized.
Well, it was a happening time, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So this issue is titled This Woman, This Warrior. And basically, it shows Miss Marvel kind of... flies in on the scene of some crooks that are robbing a bank, the Third National Bank. These crooks have really funny dialogue to me.
Mm-hmm. Forget the guards, stupid. We got the cash.
Yeah, it gets better.
I warned you to stay back, creeps. Now you're gonna die. See,
as he says it, he shoots his gun at somebody.
See, but when I read that, like, it's like, who do you call creeps usually? I thought that was really interesting. When I first read that, I thought it was like, you know, like some civilian or maybe, you know, Ms. Marvel saying, get back. But it's like one of the robbers saying to some random person, get back, you creep. And it's like, excuse me, who's the creep here? Who's robbing the bank?
Anyone you don't like is a creep, right?
I guess. Even when they are trying to prevent you from robbing a bank. Yeah. That creep.
Then, and they have, like, stockings over their faces, it seems like. And one of them goes, hey, Frankie, who the heck is that? And then Frankie, I guess, says, some dame in a costume. Oop. She's flying?
And he's like, and she's like, I can do more than fly, friend. And goes, flack. Much, much more. Well, actually, it says wham.
And then but, he goes,
you know, she's
yeah.
kicking some butts. Then these two dudes, like, jump in a van, and they're like, phew! Thank God we're in a car! And then she just picks up the car, and she's like, bye, guys. And, you know, throws him
There's some funny bad guy dialogue here. Holy Hannah! I don't believe it! Did you see that broad?
Yes, this
is a censored... Did you see what she did? This is censored?
Well, what is it? Holy Hannah?
Hannah. Oh,
who
yeah.
Who says that?
Well, right.
Or unless they did in the 70s.
And they probably say flaming a lot.
Yeah.
And then,
but what I will point out is, you know, words like broad are just, you know, they don't
I don't,
fly
I'm only allowed
days.
To say them if I'm reading it from, like, a 70s comic, I feel like.
Yeah. Nobody's really supposed to say broad these days.
Why don't women like being called broads?
It's just a derogatory term.
Because it implies that they are broad.
Oh, yeah. It's all about our appearances.
It's about width? Is it? No, I'm just wondering.
I actually don't really know that much. I just know that it's derogatory and people don't like
Well, because that's basically
that.
A word that villains used to describe superheroines.
Oh, well, that's totally why.
And then he goes, Frankie and Phil, both of them, wiped out with one punch. And then the other guy goes, this is New York, ya bozo. Ain't ya never seen a superhero before? So she's strong, so what? Once I get this car started, ain't nobody gonna...
And then...
They go, nobody gonna, huh? And yeah, she picks up the card. It's the dame. What about dame? Is that a bad word to use?
I don't know.
I think it's funny, but I probably shouldn't.
I would just
anymore.
Prefer, like,
sometimes
it's her, or, you know...
But if I'm, like, with my guy pals, you know, and somebody, you know...
In the locker room?
Is complaining about when in the locker room. They're complaining about their girl, or it's like, you know, if they're having lady problems. Sometimes it's just funny to be like, ah, dames, what you gonna do?
What you gonna do when they come for you?
Well, that's a whole nother thing. But it's just like, you know.
Wait, is that how you refer to me?
Probably not. So is that, do you think that's bad to say, use the word dame like that?
I roll my eyes at you.
Well, I think that's sort of the point. Alright, then.
Well, she has some seventh sense. They don't call it a sixth sense. They call it a seventh sense.
Okay, yeah.
Sense.
This is something that I
Where
was confused about for a while, but I thought about
predict,
it.
So, you know, who, if somebody's going to shoot her. Because
yeah,
there's, like, this dude about to shoot her. And she's like,
sense,
my seventh sense.
Yeah, what the seventh sense is, like, a sense of premonition, right? Precognitive sense.
Yeah.
Right?
I guess.
Okay, so what is the sixth sense? We have smell, sight, touch, hearing, and taste, right? Those are the five senses that, like, pretty much every human has.
Well,
if you
talk biologically, in terms of neuroscience, we have way more than just five senses.
What would you...
Like, for example, prior perception. It's... The sense that you have of your own body, like how you can know where your feet are without having to see where your feet are. I mean, that's considered a sense. Like how you can touch your own nose without having to watch your finger.
Like spatial awareness.
Of your own body, basically. So, like, some people don't have that.
Right.
Some people, in order to do things, they have to watch their own limbs do it. Like, people who don't have prior perception, if they're walking, they actually have to stare, you know, they have to watch their feet go because they don't have an actual sense of where their feet are.
Yeah.
Without looking.
So, do you think maybe that's the sixth sense in Marvel Comics?
No, because there's way more than just those six senses. There's, like, other ones, too.
Yeah. So I've been thinking about this. I think it's, like, a telepathy. If you can read minds and stuff and hear people's thoughts, that's your sixth sense. And then if you can start, like, having visions of the future and stuff, that's your seventh sense. And the eighth sense, maybe that's, like, that, prior perceptions kind of thing.
Next!
All right, wait, was that just a little early?
No.
Oh, yeah, she's got the seventh sense. Dude has a beat on her with a gun. Looks like a Tommy gun kind of thing. And then she whips around and kicks him.
She says, "Not a chance." But as all of this is happening, and the whole crowd is freaking out, the Scorpion...
Oh, yeah, Scorpion has been robbing a bank. He's robbing the bank, too.
The same bank. Well, what it turns out is that he set up those other five guys to be the distraction. So that while they're all worried about, like, you know, the police and Ms. Marvel are all worried about, you know, those five guys sneaking around, the Scorpion is going in the bank, and he's, like, the real thief, you know?
Yeah,
he's stealing the big bucks.
Scorpion is a fully outfitted supervillain from Spider-Man comics. What about this panel here? Right before we see the Scorpion, we see these the crowd reacting to her. "I've seen tough, but that little lady makes Linda Carter look like olive oil."
I have no idea what that means.
Linda Carter was a famous bodybuilder. And if you know who Elektra is from Daredevil, then I think Frank Miller based her appearance on Linda Carter.
But what does it mean that Linda Carter looked like olive oil? Like she's
she's like soft?
Like she's all like slicked up and not like real? I don't know.
And then there's a little girl. She goes, "Mommy, I've never seen a woman like that. Have you?" And she goes, "No, Susie, never." And the little girl goes, "Wow, when I grow up, I want to be just like her."
That's right, Miss Marvel. Inspiring young women to stand up against a bunch of bozos.
I feel like that's Marvel Comics being like, we're trying to get girls to read our comics, all right? This is how we want them to react to this, and they just put it right there in print.
You know, good to spell it out sometimes. Better than most men can be, you know, given credit for.
Hey, yeah, all right.
Just kidding. I'm not totally anti-men.
But I think just in the 70s, you know, things were a little more backwards than they are today.
Like, I wonder if, you know, for the 70s, because, you know, in the future we can always look back and, you know, make fun of and look at how sexist things are in the past, but, you know, I don't know much about the 70s, but I imagine some of this stuff is actually quite progressive for the 70s, you know?
I think so. Yeah. I think it also picks up when Claremont starts writing it.
Yeah.
But so anyway, yeah, Scorpion's robbing a bank. He's robbing a bank too, and he's kind of getting away with it. Then there's a guard that comes up, but
he says, "You're the Scorpion." And yeah. If you know that, then you also know the Scorpion's tail. And he goes, crack.
Yeah.
And, like, smacks him in the face with his butt.
Does he hit the dude? Yeah, he hits the dude. Kind of looks like he's hitting the gun out of his hand. But no, the gun goes off. And he goes, woof. And it looks like it worked out, because then you see Scorpion escaping into an alleyway.
And then, outside, you know, where the diversion is happening with those five guys, they're all beat up, but the cops are here, and they want to take Ms. Marvel in for questioning, and she's like, no, 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 no. But you know what I kind of like? This is, like, a really weird thing, but I kind of appreciate is, like, you know, on the side of Ms. Marvel's thighs, you know, her skin isn't just, like, pristine, you know? There's, like, some little red splotches, and it looks like, you know, like, you know, like, and I thought that was, like, maybe, you know, like, when they scanned the issue, it's an old issue,
I mean, and you know, it is a scan of probably the original issue.
And
well, I don't know.
Well, I thought maybe that it was, like, a stain or something, but then I looked in the panel below, and she's still got some, you know, little, you know, splotches on her thighs, and I'm like, you know what? Way to be, like, you know, totally cool with the fact that real women's thighs are not just smooth, pale skin.
That's true.
But we have some splotches, and it's, like, totally still sexy. So, you know, I'm all for that. I mean, she is revealing a lot of leg, and, you know, but go Ms. Marvel for revealing all of her splotches and being totally cool about it.
Yeah, totally. How about this little shading of shadow under her left buttocks?
Well, I think that's more for the male gaze. I mean, no. G-A-Z-E.
Gaze.
It actually looks kind of... It looks kind of funny, actually. Yeah. That splotch, it doesn't look like it really belongs. But, you know.
Hey, this is the 70s. They're working out some kinks in how to draw comics.
Oh, I like this part. I mean, we had a little, you know... This is the part where Carol Danvers gets hired.
She goes to the Daily Bugle, which, if you know about Spider-Man... That's where Spider-Man works. He takes, or Peter Parker takes pictures for the Daily Bugle, and it's run by a hilarious civilian, sometimes villain, sometimes hero, I guess, J. Jonah Jameson.
This dude with the weird, with the hair.
And
it's kind of Cruella DeVille-ish.
And so we learned that Cruella DeVille. His hairdo?
Well, with the black and the white, you know, like, he's, like, got this, like, black, like, you know, spikes on top.
Flat top, basically.
Flat top, and then it's completely white on the bottom, and it just, first thing that popped into my mind was Cruella DeVille, but.
Yeah, okay, anyway, hey, fair enough.
With this little weird mustache, that is kind of a bit of a Hitler mustache, I have to say. Do you see?
Is that, oh yeah, it does. Okay, not a good
sorry.
Look. Hey, but J. Jonah Jameson is kind of,
He's supposed to be kind
of You love to hate him, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
One of those things. So, yeah, Carol and Jameson are having a discussion, and basically he wants her to be the editor of a magazine called Woman.
And it's the, you know, the woman's magazine under the, I guess, the Bugle papers.
Yeah, and J. Jonah Jameson's...
And, you know, and he's all like, you know... The way I see it, a woman's magazine should have articles that are useful, like new diets and fashions and recipes and things like that, you know, just being a total mansplainer.
Yeah, and he was like, the stuff I don't like is articles on Women's Lib, interviews with Kate Millett, stories about careers for women. Yeah!
And, you know, and
so he's like a little behind the times.
You know, and she's kind of like... Well, before all this, you know, he's all like, I'm going to hire you. And she's like, well, what about my salary? And she says, I realize I'm not what you call prime material since I've only been writing for a year, but I do have some reputation. And so, you know, she negotiates salary and he's, and she says 30,000. Well, he starts out with 20 and she's like, no, 30. And he's like, 22, 25. And she's like, no, 30. And he's like, all right, 30.
He goes, blast it. How can I argue money with a woman?
Yeah, I'm starting to feel that Hitler mustache isn't totally inappropriate. And one more thing. My name is Ms. Carol Danvers. And as far as diets and recipes go, forget it.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's like, I totally feel like the, you know, misogynistic... undertones or overtones or directness.
Well, that's his role, I think.
But, you know, I still feel like, hey, you know, she negotiated hard, she demanded respect, and she said please about the diets and the recipes, you know? And I hope that she writes, you know, and edits and includes some great articles about careers for women, Women's Lib, and Kate Miller.
Whoever Kate that Miller, is.
You know? So,
and hey. So, yeah, and then when she talks about how she's only been reading for a year, we do get a little, a note from the editor, or I guess from Jerry, or Gary, I think it's Gary. It says, everyone remembers Carol Danvers, Kate Kennedy's security chief from Captain Marvel 1 through 18. And that was, earlier, in the late 60s, Captain Marvel had a series, and Carol Danvers was the security chief of the Florida kind of space base that they have. Or, you know, it's like a NASA base. And we're not starting with that stuff because she didn't have powers. You know, she's a little bit more one-dimensional. She's like the damsel in distress. Like, that and love interest, kind of?
Yeah, so, you know, maybe it's, like, back then was more of an example of the attitudes of, you know, towards women, or, you know, how she's being portrayed, and now they're like, okay, we need to actually make something that appeals to women. And it, you know, this kind of makes me think, like, way back in the 70s, like, if they're like, oh, we need to appeal to women, let's write a strong female character, then that kind of tells me, like, oh, men know that women are strong and very capable, and it just makes the whole misogynistic men wanting to be on top even more nefarious, because to me it says, like, well, I mean, and this is obviously generalizing, but I would say a fair number of men are not so much thinking, like, oh, women are incompetent. They're just like, no, we want to dominate them.
Uh-huh.
Anyway.
Well, I mean, in those original Captain Marvel comics, she is the head of the security, which is like a high post for women. But beyond that, they don't write her as, like, she's, you know, anything, like, more than just a damsel in distress. You know what I mean? It's like, on the surface, she's... They're being progressive, but they, you know...
Right.
She's still kind of one-dimensional.
And here, they're giving her just a little bit more. You know, she can negotiate.
Well, is it a real negotiation? This is my issue.
It's not a real... Because she's just like 30. Nope,
yeah,
30.
She just says 30, and then he tries to negotiate and then just gives up. It's not like a real negotiation. It's not like she's a great negotiator. She just, like, stands her ground, which... That's cool, but it's not, like... Realistic, I would say.
Well, like, would you say, like, it would be more realistic if she had been, like, well, 40, and he's, like,
or if,
20?
Or maybe if there was a part where he was, like, yeah, maybe something like that. Or if he was, like, then I'm not going to hire you, and she starts to walk out or something. You know what I mean? Instead, she's just kind of sitting on his desk. We get a nice view of her butt. You know what I mean?
You know.
And she's just kind of, like, you know... being the strong woman, but without actually kind of being that, you know?
You mean by, like, not...
Well, just not... I don't know. That's just my own take on this.
Yeah, I mean...
I feel like Gary Conway, his heart is in the right place. You know?
Well, here's the thing. In a real-life situation, would that have worked? I would say unlikely, you know? Like, because she's doing a lot of things that... You know, that stereotypically men find, like, threatening in a woman. You know, like, they're recently with the whole thing with, you know, with, was it Serena Williams?
Yeah.
With her, you know, getting upset at an umpire's call on, you know, in tennis, and there's this big hoopla about it.
Well, it was really the call, basically, when she started to argue things... They said that she was, like, out of line, and they docked her a whole game or something.
Yeah, exactly, but you...
And then she was saying, if this were a man, like, they would never have been punished like that.
Well, and it's true. I mean, there are American tennis players that are well-known for their temper tantrums.
Totally.
And famous. Admired for
like,
it.
Like Johnny McEnroe or whatever his name is.
Yeah, and people love them because of it, but... If a woman steps out of line, you know, everybody's in, like... So, back to this, you know, like, I think what she did on paper is pretty cool, but in real life, would that have worked out in her benefit? I, unfortunately, don't think so. And not because she doesn't deserve to stand up for her, you know, her rights and her salary that she believes she deserves.
Yeah.
But... Because women are not treated well when they are anything but polite, quiet, and agreeable.
Right. But, I mean, she does get the deal done, you know, $30,000, which we did the math, and that equals, in 2018, about $127,000.
Which is not bad.
So, yeah, you
Way
know, for
go.
Us musicians, we think that's pretty good. One thing I want to just go over about that page before we turn the page is J. Jonah Jameson. He says her first assignment as editor of the magazine is to do an exposé on this on Ms. Marvel, because they just they somehow got film of her flying away, and so they're watching it in, like, whatever the screening room is at the Daily Bugle, and he's like, he says, "This is something important that I want to tell you. I hate superheroes, Miss Danvers. Hate them! We know he hates Spider-Man. He's a menace." So moving on, so she gets the deal done.
Well, and the thing to keep in mind, too, at this point, is that Carol Danvers does not know that she is Miss Marvel. And Miss Marvel does not know that she is Carol Danvers. So, as she's being given this assignment to follow
Miss Marvel,
you know, she doesn't know that really she's going to be reporting on her alter.
Yeah, it's not like she is in on the dramatic irony happening here.
Yeah. To her, this is just another assignment. So and then, here we meet Petey!
Yeah, she's leaving J. Jonah Jameson's office, and she gets recognized by Mary Jane Watson, who is being accompanied by Peter Parker. And she goes, "Hey, you're Carol Danvers, aren't you?" And she goes, "Why? Is there a warrant out for my arrest?" And then Mary Jane's like, "Hey, no, I once saw your picture in Rolling Stone on some article you wrote about Diana Ross." So I guess Carol Danvers wrote for Rolling Stone before she joined the Daily Bugle. It's pretty cool.
You know, I feel like if she already wrote for Rolling Stone, then maybe she deserves her $30,000, you know? Like, even though she's been writing for a year. I mean, she wrote an article about Diana Ross in the Rolling Stone.
Well,
that's probably $30,000.
But apparently, I think, well, we're going to find out later. She did more than that. Well, and then she goes, this is where MJ calls Peter Parker Petey. She goes, "Well, listen, Petey." Or no, "Well, listen. Petey was just telling me old Jonah wants to make you an editor. Say hello to the lady, Petey." And he goes, "Hello, lady."
And she's like, "Petey?"
Yeah. And then Carol Danvers knows him, like, Pete, as in Peter Parker, the news photographer who was nominated for last year's News Guild Award.
And MJ's like, "That's my Petey."
And then she introduces herself, Mary Jane Watson, but you can call me MJ. Then we see Scorpion. He's running through the streets. He jumps in a hole, kind of like down an alleyway. He's carrying bags of money. That's the thing with Spider-Man villains. They're always just after bags of money. And then I think later they're after Spider-Man. But they're,
because
they're
Spider-Man
not
is stopping them from getting their bags of money.
Exactly. Their motives are not like, you know, like world domination and that kind of thing.
They just want bags of money.
They're just trying to get bags of money from wherever they're being stored or transported.
Well, except this one, you know, I feel like Scorpion, he has a legitimate beef.
That's true. He,
you know, but
what's his beef?
Way of
what's
going,
his beef?
Well, he's got a metal suit attached to him permanently.
Like, yeah, that sucks. Grafted to his body.
So that's a pretty legitimate beef against the guy who decided you were going to do that and then didn't tell you that that's what was going to happen.
And so he's going through this alleyway and goes, "Gotta be careful. Corman has this whole joint wired into one big booby trap, but that's fine with me because pretty soon it'll all be mine."
And so, he's
so Corman, we're
going
to meet soon, right? Oh, yeah. So we flip the page and here's this dude, Corman, who basically, well, we learn that Scorpion is going to try to get his revenge on that creepo publisher, J. Jonah Jameson. And then he arrives in the scientist's lab, which I guess this is Corman. And he hands them the money. And it's 200 grand from the bank's payroll cash.
Ooh, so what's if 30 grand is like the equivalent
of 127?
Then
it's a lot. I don't know.
200 grand is probably in the millions.
It's a lot. Yeah.
Of today's money.
Yeah, and then he goes, "Funny, you know, I thought you'd want more to sell a setup like this." And then Corbin goes, "This amount is quite sufficient, Gargan." Which is, Mac Gargan is Scorpion's
Gargan?
Name, but later he's like, "The name Scorpion, Professor. Mac Gargan is dead, and he's been dead a long time."
So really what we find out is villains are created from other people being assholes.
Yeah, exactly. So then Corman, he seems like he knows some things, but he's keeping it to himself. And the editor, or probably Gary, goes, take a long look, reader. We've got a feeling we may well see this man again. He kind of looks like one of the apes from Planet of the Apes. Can I say that?
He does a little bit. He's got kind of that, like...
There are a lot of lines on his face, which kind of make it look like there could be further. He's got facial hair. He's got the haircut that the apes have.
He's got the permanent frown.
Just saying. Yeah. He looks pissed. He's a stern scientist. And we learn that he actually has been, like, making weapons for Hydra. So, and we know, if you know anything about Marvel, you know Hydra, bad. They're kind of like the sworn enemies of Captain America. And
they're like the evil organization trying to take over the world.
Yeah, it's like you got S.H.I.E.L.D. S.H.I.E.L.D.'s good. Hydra, bad.
Except S.H.I.E.L.D. gets, well...
Well, S.H.I.E.L.D. gets infiltrated by Hydra.
Yeah.
I think that happens also in the comics, right? It always happens. That kind of stuff. All right, so then MJ and Carol...
Danvers are going back to Carol Danvers' apartment.
Yeah.
You know, and...
And we learned that it's the penthouse of what... Central Park penthouse, right? So, and then she goes, how do you afford a fantastic layout like that? Do editors make that much money? She goes, they don't, MJ, but some lucky writers do. Royalties from my first book about the space industry.
Ooh.
Because she was, you know, hanging out with Captain Marvel. So we get a little background on her time at Cape Kennedy. She goes, that's right, you were a security consultant at Cape Kennedy, weren't you? I remember reading about you in the papers when that weird Captain Marvel guy first showed up on Earth. Why'd you leave all that, Carol, and how come you became a writer? Not because I wanted to, MJ, but because I had to. Captain Marvel's appearance at the Cape and my inability to capture him just about destroyed my security field career. I kept trying to hold it together until I finally went back to my first love, writing.
Not Captain Marvel.
Yeah. I'm not sure what her deal is with Captain Marvel, because I haven't read those issues. But I know also, like, she has other romances. Peter Corbeau being, I think, an important one. I'm waiting for him to show up in these issues.
So then this happens. Turn out I have more talent for the pen than the sword. And I'll tell you, I'm a lot happier than... And then she sort of, I guess, she doesn't faint, but she sort of falls over and drops the tray she was carrying.
And MJ is like, Carol! And she goes, I'm all right, Mary Jane. Just a migraine headache.
She's been getting those a lot.
Yeah, apparently. Yeah. And then...
And MJ wants to call a doctor.
And she's like, no, but you better just go. So, and then MJ's really worried, but Carol's like, we'll talk about your photography tomorrow at the office. Right now, I'm not going to be very good company. And so, and then MJ thinks to herself, okay, Carol, take care. Wow, that's spooky, the way she just fell apart. And then Carol kind of just stumbles over to her bed and collapses. So then we cut to J. Jonah Jameson out on the streets outside of the Daily Bugle. A fuming Jonah Jameson paces angrily back and forth, a snarl brewing deep in his throat. That's like his natural state, right?
Snarling.
And then so he's waiting
blasted
for his chauffeur. He's waiting for
blasted.
His chauffeur. Yeah, blasted is another one of those non-swear words that kind of conveys
a swear word.
Yeah. Exactly.
I tell him to meet me at the south exit. And so he's late, and then we get a wham.
Where is that imbecile?
And then we get a wham, and the scorpion has just whacked him with his tail.
Yeah, Jonah's like, eh? What's that sound behind me? And then the scorpion goes, it's your death knell, Jameson. For years I plotted my revenge against you. And now, at last, vengeance is gonna be mine. And then some people in the crowd recognize him. Holy crow! It's that scorpion crook! Why has he grabbed that man? What's he gonna do? So then he climbs his building with J. Jonah Jameson. And he says he blames the death of Mac Gargan, his, you know, former human identity, on Jameson, right?
And Scorpion thinks, if you only knew, Buster, you thank God you're not J. Jonah Jameson. Because of Jameson, I'm a monster. McGargan is dead! And he's furious.
Mac Gargan. Mac is his first name.
Mac Gargan? McGargan?
I think that's a funnier name. McGargan! And Jonah Jameson is my murderer. And in this court, the penalty for murder is death! Death! Death!
But less than 60 seconds later.
Yeah. A now familiar figure flashes through the sunset sky. And then
she says, her seventh sense had warned me, or warned her, way too late. That seventh sense, tisk tisk, warned her too late that Jameson was going to be kidnapped. So I guess it's not just who's going to attack her, but she kind of can predict the future.
Yeah.
And know when things are going to happen.
And she just sort of knows where to go. And she has, like, great intuition. And so she's like, yeah, if my intuition's correct, I should pick up the necessary vibrations there, which is a Daily Bugle building. And she goes, wait, something odd.
And she shows up. She's like, why is this so familiar?
Yeah,
because
right.
She doesn't know she's Carol Danvers and that she actually works there. But,
yeah.
You know, she's just like...
And the people of the Daily Bugle are like, no, I've seen everything. First Spider-Man makes this office his hangout, and now...
A flying woman!
Is it just goodness!
Is it just a thing that, like, superheroes end up working for, like, newspapers? Like, should we, like, treat our journalists, except the ones at Fox News, with a little bit more respect because they're actually all, superheroes?
I think that it's just a way to sell more comics. Like, more issues of Ms. Marvel are going to get sold if you put Peter Parker and Mary Jane on the cover. And so then they have to make an appearance. And I think Peter Parker, he just kind of walks by and says hello.
Yeah.
And that's it for him.
Right.
You know what I mean?
But, you know, they do say he's coming back. He's going to be in it more soon. I think they say that.
And then, yeah, Joe Robertson, the city editor, goes, relax, people. She isn't going to hurt us unless she's changed colors since capturing those robbers this morning. This has all happened in one day.
Busy
and then
woman.
He introduces himself, Joe Robertson, city editor, and he goes, Miss, and he goes, Miss, you want my name? And he goes, assuming you have one, and she says, I don't think I do. And he just, he accepts that, he goes, I see, like, what is it you want here, Miss?
And, she, you know, her eyes kind of glaze over, and she somehow is able to see what happens.
Is that seventh sense in action?
Yeah, seventh sense. Now her eyes are glazing over from the seventh sense.
Right, she looks at to a horizon invisible to normal human eyes.
And she sees Scorpion has taken him to a house.
Abandoned. An abandoned, derelict house in Brooklyn.
And slowly she leaves her trance, like a diver returning from the ocean floor.
Yeah.
And when she fully regains awareness, turns out everybody had called the cops on her, and she's like,
yeah, the
God
police show
damn
up.
Damn it. And then she goes. Well, she doesn't say damn it.
Well, didn't the Scorpion just kidnap J. Jonah Jameson?
Yeah. Well, it says, something tells me you were spotted coming here, lady. Guess they want a word with you about your activities. So I'm not even under the impression that anybody has reported that he's missing, right? Because he was already leaving.
But they say that and about the Scorpion, the cops. Oh, but he was already leaving. You're true. So he might not be...
They might not know that he's, you know, taken Jameson yet. They probably just want to know about the Scorpion because, well, I guess they do see him.
Yeah, the whole crowd sees him.
Yeah, so, yeah, they have questions for her.
All right, and then Ms. Marvel's like, see you later. And she flies away. And, yeah, she's got, like, something else is more important. A man's life. And she flies through the air.
She jumps out a window and just flies.
Yeah, and she knows where to go because of her seventh sense, which is very convenient. Not much detective work required for Ms. Marvel, right?
Well, you know, he is kidnapped and about to die, so maybe...
Then we see J. Jonah Jameson hanging over a vat of acid. With a, like, are these guns pointed at him? Laser beams?
Yeah, or
laser
something.
Cannons?
I mean, honestly, that acid kind of looks like, you know... Fanta or something. Like, if there were pink Fanta. Or, like, you know...
A soda?
Yeah. Or,
do
like...
you want to?
Or, like, emergency, you know?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I have raspberry emergency, and that's what it looks like when I have it in water.
Exactly.
It's, like, bubbling pink stuff. So, I guess it's acid, but, you know...
Well, we don't know that. He's just hanging over a vat of purpley, bubbly liquid.
I guess that's true. I mean, would a villain, like, totally fake out someone just to get them to confess? Maybe that's more of a superhero thing to do, where they'll, like, hang someone over a bubbling vat of something and be like, it's acid, but it's really, like, a lot of emergency.
Yeah. Maybe, I don't know.
We'll never know. We know this is acid because this does burn.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we find out. And so J. Jonah Jameson is yelling at the Scorpion, why, you mad fool, why? I offered you everything. Money, fame, a membership in my private club. Why do you want to kill me?
Men really care about their private clubs.
Yeah, like that would make a huge difference.
They do. Masons are a thing, right?
That's true. Well, some of our favorite composers were Masons.
Yeah.
Then he goes, because I don't like you, Jameson. Because I hate you. Look at me. And see if you can understand that. You see someone powerful, right? Someone with more strength than most people know in a lifetime. But when I look at me, I see a freak. This isn't a costume, Jameson. It doesn't come off. And then he talks about how J. Jonah Jameson basically paid him to do this experimental treatment in Spider-Man number 20, Amazing Spider-Man number 20, and how it kind of didn't really work out, and now he's held a grudge against him ever since.
Yeah, because even though he has super strength and super armor, but he didn't realize it was for keeps. I can never lead a normal life, never feel this sun on my skin, never love, all because of you. And let's face it, that's a pretty sad, you know,
yeah,
like, existence. I kind of feel for Scorpion right now. I'm not totally for the dropping people in acid thing, but come on, that sucks.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, and I highly doubt Jameson was like, oh, I think I have something that'll really benefit you. You
know? He's trying to capture Spider-Man. And he's, like, just sacrificing people's lives for that. Yeah, because J. Jonah Jameson, kind of a villain sometimes.
That Hitler mustache.
Know? Yeah, exactly.
So, you know.
And then he says, the liquid in that vat is acid, Jameson. It won't kill you much. So it'll only kill him a little bit.
Okay.
And J. Jonah Jameson says, choke. Which I think is more like a...
Or is that more like...
It should be like a sound effect. Yeah. But no, he says choke.
Then
Ms. Marvel shows up and she opens the door and a laser beam shoots out at her. And but because she's been daydreaming, because she thinks to herself, like, if I'm going to make my way through the death trap maze I sense beyond this door, I'll need all my concentration and all my Kree-born skill. And then she goes, Kree-born? But I'm an Earth woman. Why did I think... And then that's when she barely dodges a laser blast. And she goes, daydreaming almost cost me my life.
So, you know, she's got some memory issues.
Yeah, she's got some things going through her head. Yeah, for sure. So we learn, basically, she kind of identifies as Kree, the Ms. Marvel. Uh-huh. And doesn't really... She vaguely recalls things about Carol Danvers' actions, like being in the Daily Bugle, but can't really place it.
Right. I mean, she's not really recalling. She's getting these... impressions, which, you know, I think it's funny. She's got all these, like, seventh senses, you know, that tell her all these crazy things, but she doesn't even remember, like, her own actual life.
Yeah, right.
Which is interesting.
Yeah, exactly. So then she rips off the door and uses it as a shield, and she slides under another big metal door that's closing, and she barely makes it through.
She's just dodging around.
Yeah, she's like, you know, strong and agile.
Yeah, see, this is like, you know, like, at least her front is, like, partially covered, but her entire back is exposed. This is, like, I guess she is, like, super strong, but come on, you know, this is, like, a little bit, like,
it's ridiculous. A funny costume. Yeah. It's very funny. I think it evolves over time. So then she shows up in the lair, and the Scorpion's like, who on earth are you? And she basically flies and... thooms him. She, like, I don't know, she whacks him with her fists.
These sound effects are, like, thoom.
They're good. We got some other chunk, thump.
Wham.
Pow.
They use Wham a lot.
Classic. Yeah, I mean, you know.
And Jameson's
like, good one.
Get me out of here!
And then she's like, what happened to your anti-superhero crusade, Mr. Jameson? Cut from lack of funds?
Well, so she's teasing him. You know, he did try to underhand her $30,000 negotiation for salary, you know?
Yeah, but she doesn't know that.
Yeah, but I think it's still funny.
But just like the feeling of being disrespected still lingers deep within her.
Well, you know, somehow she knew, as Ms. Marvel, that he's, like, anti-superhero. Is that just, a known thing?
Well, I mean, he is constantly putting out headlines against all the superheroes, especially Spider-Man.
So he's not being sneaky.
Yeah. I don't know. And she did show up at the Daily Bugle, right?
And, well, what's funny is then she's like, she, you know, gets hit.
Yeah, because she's distracted talking to Jameson.
And she's distracted because she's got that odd feeling that I've met this man before, but I've never seen him before in my life.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird.
So it's a little confusing.
And then Scorpion's like, it's going to take more than that to get me. And then he goes, tell me who you are, why you wear a costume like Captain Marvel's, and maybe I'll let you live. And then he takes a swipe at her with his tail, and she dodges it and goes, dodging my tail? Like an acrobat. And then she kicks him in the face, and she goes, not like an acrobat, Scorpion, like a Kree soldier. And what you said, like, about my costume, it's made me remember, like coming out of fog. My costume is like Captain Marvel's for a reason. My powers come from the alien Kree race, the powers of a warrior born. And then she whams him in the face.
But this whole time, she's still like, Kree? And, you know, Scorpion's like, you're crazy! I heard about how Kree and how they've got sentries who fought the Fantastic Four, but you sure ain't one of them. The way you talk, you're as human as I.
Yeah, he says their science is a million years ahead of Earth. So Kree are an advanced alien race, basically. Which, reading this makes me want to read the old Fantastic Four, where all this is kind of laid out. Like, Fantastic Four was the first superhero magazine that Stan Lee and Jack Kirby did together, and it was, like, you know, Doctor Doom, the Skrulls, which I think Skrulls are going to be in the Captain Marvel movie. They're, like, Skrulls are in issue 2 of Fantastic Four.
These are the same Kree from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Yep, and from Guardians of the Galaxy. But not all Kree are blue. Some of them have, like, a more white skin.
Well, yeah, and they just have that, like, silvery, the patterned, silver, bluish.
Do you know who the leader of the Kree is?
Who?
It's this guy named the Supreme Intelligence, which is basically like a giant brain like Krang from Ninja Turtles. Huh? And he kind of, like, I don't know what it is. He probably has psychic powers. So that's why I kind of want to read those Fantastic Four issues, because, you know, a lot of the Marvel, like, especially the cosmic universe is, like, laid out in those first 100 issues.
See, what I find really interesting about this is in this scene, she's, like, completely explaining to Scorpion, like, oh, yeah, I have no idea where I come from. I'm a woman, but I got my powers from the Kree somehow. You know, like, if I was Ms. Marvel, I don't think I would, like, go around telling, you know, my adversaries, like, well, this is my life story. This is where I come from. I have no idea who I am, really. I have amnesia. You know, it's like, maybe you're giving away a little TMI.
Well, and that's the thing villains do, too. But it's for the benefit of us, the readers.
Right, you know? But can't they be, like, thought bubbles?
Well,
rather than speech bubbles? Like, can't they have, like, just, maybe not a silent fight, but, you know, because things are probably crashing, but can't they have, like, a non-talking fight, and then all of these just be thought bubbles?
That's an excellent point. But, I mean, you know, they are having a conversation, and he goes, but you sure ain't one of them, meaning the Kree, because the way you talk, you're as human as I am. You don't even have an accent. What does a Kree accent sound like?
Well, in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., they sounded like humans.
They sound American, but with more, you know,
American.
It's more greased over. Yeah, but Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., come on. They probably, I don't know.
How accurate is that?
No, actually, and also in the movies, like, Ronan the Accuser is, like, the bad guy in Guardians of the Galaxy, and he just kind of talks with, like, a magnanimous American accent.
And it's like, okay, so they put some, like, things in you know, in bold. And she says, "You're right, Scorpion. I'm not a Kree, but in some way I don't understand. I've gained powers from the Kree. Super strength, flight, and a strange seventh sense."
And Scorpion's like, "Seventh sense? What about the sixth sense?"
"And one thing more, total amnesia." Like, that's one of the powers, is she got total amnesia. And it's like, do you really want to tell your adversaries what all your powers are? Like, give them a little surprise, you know?
So, yes, exactly.
You know.
"You mean you don't remember your past? Bunk." Bunk means I don't believe it. BS.
And she's like, "Believe it or not, I've been so busy fighting crooks the past few days, I haven't thought once about my blackout spells or about my complete lack of memory." So, you know, if I'm Scorpion, I'm like, huh, blackout spells, I should, like, watch her and wait for one of those and then kill her then.
Yeah, maybe I've had a mental block against thinking about my past, but the fact remains,
I don't know who I am! It's,
yeah.
Anyway,
all right.
Next panel.
So it's pretty funny. But we get the point, us the readers. Then she takes him by the tail and swings him around, and she swings him into the vat of acid, which pours all over him, and
he's burning and
before
fleeing.
The Scorpion can finish his scream, he's inundated by the seething acid, and though his grafted-on costume protects him from the full force of the raging chemical, he still burns. And shrieking, he flees, right?
And she's still like, oh, that poor man. Because
yeah,
I think she understands, you know, like, yeah, I don't want, you know, Jameson to get killed, and it's bad, but, you know, this guy is stuck in a giant thing of metal, and now is burning from acid. Like, the guy's not having a good day. He's not having a good life.
Exactly. It's no good.
And then, of course, Jameson is like, "For heaven's sake, woman, don't just stand there, let me down!" Because he's a little whiner.
And she goes, "I've been considering it, Mr. Jameson."
"But I've decided, you can call me Ms. Marvel."
Yeah, she names herself, that's cool. "My costume ties me to Captain Marvel in a way I don't yet understand. Till I do understand, I'll need a name, and Ms. Marvel is as good as any."
And he's just like,
you're crazy. "Ms.?" No, he doesn't say that, but he does say, "You're crazy."
Probably,
like,
because he's just like,
why.
"Get me out of here."
But probably because,
like,
she's talking about...
what is this monologue?
Yeah, exactly. Like, why are you talking about your lack of memory and...
Like, can't you just let me out first and then go, like, by yourself, have this, like, monologue with yourself? Anyway, Jameson, whatever.
Then she leaves him and she goes, "That's something I need to find out, Mr. Jameson, when I learn who I am and where I come from." And he goes, "Wait, my hands are still chained." And she goes, "Until then, try not to make too hasty a judgment about me, hmm?" And he goes, "What about my hands?" And Ms. Marvel only smiles and is gone.
Yeah, she's like, "I'm not going to do everything for you, dude."
Yeah, well, she saved his life. That's good enough,
it's
right?
Like, get out of these yourself. So now we're already at an epilogue.
Already?
Well, not already. Okay, when I think epilogue, I feel like epilogues are, like, at the very end of a series when it's over. This is only the first issue.
It's
Why
first
do we
issue.
Need an epilogue?
Oh, but, you know, it's
like,
an action-packed first issue. Two fights with the Scorpion. You meet Mary Jane Watson and Spider-Man, and...
I just wouldn't call this an epilogue.
Well...
Because there's more issues to come, and this is just part of the issue. An epilogue is like, there are no more issues left.
Well,
Harry Potter has no epilogue until the end of the seventh book.
Sorry, I think the
Not
next...
Not the first book!
I think the next issue has two epilogues. So, I mean, just like, basically, the main story is over, but the morning after, she goes back into the Daily Bugle, and J. Jonah Jameson, he's got bandages on his arms, on his hands. I don't know what happened, but I guess...
Probably sawed the thing off and actually cut himself.
You think so?
Yeah.
He goes, "I want an expose of that Marvel dame, and I want it started now! Nobody can make a fool out of J. Jonah Jameson, especially not a woman!"
He made a fool of himself.
And then she goes, "I'll do what I can, Jonah." Still, she's more of a mystery than Spider-Man. And he goes, "Don't ever mention that name in this office! Ever! Get out!" And she goes, "Whoosh." So much for Jonah.
Jonah the Pussycat!
I wonder what happened to him with the Scorpion and Ms. Marvel. Whatever it was, it sure made him mad.
You know, if it weren't for Jonah, it'd be a really nice place to work. People are good, the atmosphere's fine. And then there's Jonah. Oh, well, I wanted to play editor. And now here I am. Yes, here I am.
Then she, yeah, exactly. Would you like Strange? When Jonah mentioned Ms. Marvel just now, I felt a weird chill, as though someone had stepped on my grave.
Like those blackout spells I've been having. They worry me. I never know when they'll strike, how long they'll last, or what happens. So, you know, this is where we really find out that she does not. Carol Danvers has no idea she's Ms. Marvel, and Ms. Marvel has no idea that she's Carol Danvers.
Yeah. And she starts to think maybe she needs to see a doctor.
But she's deathly afraid.
Yeah.
To see a doctor. Funny. Jameson's giving you a mystery to solve, plus I have one of my own. But what she doesn't realize, it's a slime mystery!
Oh my god, the irony.
But which is the greater enigma? The woman named Carol Danvers, or the warrior we all call Ms. Varvel?
Varvel? Ms. Marvel. Yeah. Feeny. Then it says Feeny. Next issue.
The secret origin of Ms. Marvel. So we get to find out pretty soon.
Then, did you read this thing by Gary Conway?
No, I didn't.
I read it last night. He's just saying, well, it's interesting, you know.
What does he say at the end of these?
Well, he says, well, why, you know, why didn't a woman create Ms. Marvel? First he talks about it for a while, and he says, you know, Roy Thomas suggested the name of the book, and Stan Lee suggested doing the book. Those are some of the main... people at if you don't know Stan Lee, he's I don't know what you're doing listening to this podcast, but he created Captain Marvel, Spider-Man, X-Men, Avengers, Thor, Incredible Hulk,
you might have
Doctor Strange. Yeah, he's the writer, and Roy Thomas was kind of like his protege who ended up taking over for X-Men and Avengers, and he wrote Captain Marvel after the first issue, and so he's the one actually that created the character Carol Danvers. So they talk about that for a while. There's a little bit of background on the Cape Kennedy, who she's the NASA security chief. Then they talk. He says, "Why is a man writing this book about a woman? Why didn't a woman create Ms. Marvel?" And to that question, there are really no simple answers. And then he says, for one thing, for whatever reason, right or wrong, at the moment there are no thoroughly trained and qualified women writers working in the superhero comics field. By making that statement, I've alienated half a dozen talented women, but I stand by what I said, no women writers trained in the superhero comics. I don't know if that's true or not, but, you know, I definitely hadn't... Like, the women whose comics I've read are Louise Simonson and Ann Nocenti and Mary Jo Duffy, who... You know, and some other ones, but those are, like, the ones I've read the most of, and they are coming later. And he says, there should be, no denying it, but there aren't. That's reason number one. Reason number two is more personal. A man is writing this book because a man wants to write this book. Me, it's a challenge. I want to do it. More reason than this, I don't personally need. Reason three is, why not a man? If the women's liberation movement means anything, it's a battle for equality of the sexes. And it's my contention that a man properly motivated and aware of the pitfalls can write a woman character as well as a woman. There used to be a belief that women couldn't write convincing male adventure stories, but in many fields that's been proven completely untrue. I hold that the reverse is equally untrue, that men can't write convincing women. That men haven't written convincing women in the past doesn't mean it can't be done. It simply means that those men as individuals could not. Whether I can or not is something you'll have to decide, but in the abstract, why not? Then he talks about how he's rambling and it's 3 a.m. But I thought it was interesting, you know.
Well, like, I feel like that if someone is going to say, you know, and again, he's a product of his time, but if he's going to say in this, you know, ending part, like, well, no woman is qualified, then I feel like it has to be said that perhaps the reason why no woman who's qualified has been found as of yet,
right,
is because they've been discouraged or completely barred from even trying in the first place.
Yeah, right. Totally. Yeah, so, I mean, at the end of each issue, there's a text page, which usually is letters written in, you know, like for feedback and stuff about how the issues are going, what they like and what they don't like. But for the first issue, it's the writer kind of giving a spiel about why he went about writing this. There's one other paragraph that I think is interesting. And he goes, this is before all that I just read. He goes, like anyone who's been alive in the past decade or so, I'm aware of the tremendous changes occurring in society. And like anyone who's lived with those changes, I've changed myself. Only a fathead would call himself a reformed male chauvinist and expect people to take him seriously. That's not the sort of judgment a man can make about himself. One lacks perspective. Still, if not totally liberated, I know enough to be aware that a problem exists and to understand that we're all susceptible to chauvinism at times. Thus, approaching the character of Ms. Marvel, I bent over backward to put myself in her point of view because I'm a writer and because injecting oneself into character is the writer's craft, I believe I can succeed. Like I said, it was not so simple. And then he talks about why is a man writing the book, why not a woman?
And, you know, he's trying. I appreciate him for addressing that as an issue, because I think there are many men out there who would not even think of this as as an issue.
Totally. And, I mean, at some point, maybe we want to go through some other non-Carol Danvers comics that feature the women and see how they are written. Like Stan Lee, bless his heart, he did a lot of great things for comics, but writing interesting women characters is not really one of them. They're always just like, you know, their wants and needs are just fit to the story. They're always just worried about, you know, fighting over boys. They're, you know, worried about cracking their nails. It's pretty lame.
Do they think about how their boobs jut out, too? That's one of the things that I read, actually, someone was critiquing the Game of Thrones series and George R. R. Martin and how he writes women. And there are some scenes where they're like, you know, he's writing some female characters and they're like, as I was walking, I could feel the cloth of my robe rubbing against my breast, you know? And it's like, sorry, dude, no woman is thinking about that. You know, just like no man is thinking about like, oh, I could feel my leather trousers caressing my ball sack. Like, is that what men think about? Like,
I mean, if it's, I wouldn't say caressing, but if it's like uncomfortable, then we're like, this wedgie is really bumming me out. All right, anyway, that's it for this issue. Ms. Marvel number one, thanks for listening.
We'll be back for the origin story.
Yeah, the secret origin
of Ms. Marvel. Yeah, next issue.
So that'll be in 1 week.
See you guys next time.
Yeah, see you guys next time. Thanks.